Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 144, Musings with the Golden Sparrow, sampler number 2. This sampler section is riffing on a concept by Claude Levi-Strauss about the other, how that plays out in treatment of people, human beings, all the relations on the geopolitical scene and elsewhere, and what can be done to reverse that way of thinking and action. As well, a little bit on the lineages of writing and ideas and how that shapes our consciousness. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. It's another outdoor show. I'm going to read something written recently, so it's a bit jumbled in the notebook, but just want to, again, feel like it's some really important information to get out there, and also helps this writer to kind of go over it while it's in process. So here goes. This writer considers himself as much a recorder, a piecer together, P-I-E-C-E-R, and piecer, P-A-E-C-E-R, together as a writer. Writings through time, the sharing of insights and such like, the ability to have someone from the past speak to you now. This socially, educationally acceptable, but someone like a shaman or medium conveying messages from the spirit world or from subtle planes of existence, not as acceptable, though gaining traction. Plus, you have to include original people's oral tradition. Some things pictographed on hides. That's the way the Lakota record different events, for one example. Or Hopi prophecy rock, yet no book to say that this is what God said back when God was supposedly speaking and on tour, a prolific writer, telling people how to live their lives by the book. Thus, different cultures and ways of thinking, different heart-mind roots. So, which has had more effect on you, things read or things said? Or maybe it's a combination. A book's good for helping remember stuff, but can make you lazy, keep you from really remembering. Yet within book tradition, like honeycombs, writers building a sacred house of honeyed knowledge and experiences, each one adding, drawing from the ones before, and giving something to the next. So, hi honey, I am home. The idea for this next bit from Pepe Escobar's epic book, Globalistan, How the Globalized World is Dissolving into Liquid War, Nimble Books, 2006-2009. Escobar cites Zygmunt Bauman, citing Claude Lévi-Strauss. And here's the quote from the book, the greatest, and this is quotes within quotes in some of this bit, citing Claude Lévi-Strauss, the greatest social anthropologist of our time, who determined that whenever human history had to deal with the necessity of facing the other, it came out with only two strategies. The first consists in vomiting, throwing the others out as they are seen as incurably strange and alien. The second strategy consists in a soi-disant desalination, that means ingesting, devouring alien bodies and spirit as to make them by metabolism identical to the bodies that ingest them, thus indistinguishable. This strategy has included cannibalism and forced assimilation. Cultural crusades declared wars against local practices, against calendars, cults, dialects, and other prejudice and superstition. Superstitions. That's how the Synopticon Society also deals with its own Islamophobia. Thus, the other is thrown out or eaten up. John Trudell wrote, "We know it is our destiny to starve the beast." As one of many possible examples, what some call Native Americans or American Indians, who are not American nor Indians, rather what each of their tribes and or nations are called, there's over like 550 at least federally recognized tribes, and I think a couple hundred more. It includes Alaskan villages and such like. What this traveler's learned to refer to when picking a generic term, original peoples, first peoples, native peoples, original inhabitants, have experienced and continue to in various degrees both genocide and forced assimilation. Via the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination and the Christ colonizer, aka Christopher Columbus, and the labeling of the original inhabitants as non-Christian and thus the other, 90 to 95% of their population, no, too cold and scientific a word, their peoples, fellow human beings, wiped out, no, too weak a word, mass murdered. Also, later on, with forced boarding schools under the slogan, "Kill the Indian, save the man," forced assimilation, males, long hair, embracing the feminine side, cut, given English names, etc. These just brief examples of the otherization, which many have experienced, Jewish peoples, Armenian peoples, black peoples, gay peoples, so-called retarded peoples, and other misfits. Not fitting into a system that necessitates the other to keep it in business. Now it's the global corporate empire, a coterie of economic hitmen fueled by Goebbels, Joseph Goebbels repeating the lie. That's cited earlier in the book here, the Nazi propaganda of just repeating the lie till people believe it's the truth. Repeating the lie through a slick propaganda machine greased with Edward Bernays sauce. He was Freud's cousin or brother, I gotta look that up, who accentuated the use of psychology to manipulate minds and emotions to us to sell us more stuff. Add to that sordid mix the so-called superpower puffed up hollow bully U.S. Empire, another statistic to look up, something like 20 million killed by the U.S. Empire since World War II, maybe? Something like that. But this is the age of the Pacha, of reunion, meeting ourselves again, the Fifth World, and various other prophecies. So, the caring for the other, vis-a-vis two forms, not vomiting, and not ingesting. Instead of the other that all systems of domination are based on, having an other to which one is superior, or the other is the enemy, which helps stir up bigotry and fear, calling people savages or subhuman or slaves or animals. It includes natives, blacks, Jews, gypsies, gays, retarded, anything inferior. There were Japanese and German POW camps in the U.S. Now it's mostly Islamophobia and demonization of foreign leaders who are popular with their people, for example, Chavez, Putin, Assad. Another way of looking at it and living well is concern for the other, asking what one can do for others, rather than simply satisfying oneself and hoarding and amassing while the masses go hungry. Predatory capitalism, lottery, rags to riches, democracy, where everyone has a chance to outdo an other. Instead of instilling caring about others, a shift of perception can guide actions to further the fair treatment of all humankind and all the relations. So basically, I'll just add what hasn't been written yet. This idea of the other as the other either vomited or ingested as the two principal ways that fellow beings are mistreated in order to have a system of control and resources and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So instead of the vomiting aspect, there's the caring for the other, including the other. And instead of assimilating or ingesting, again, the inclusion, celebrating the diversity and respecting all the relations. So maybe there's a distinction there, I'm not sure yet, but there's either the pushing away of, so in that case certainly in some kind of inclusion is necessary, and then there's also the much more subtle assimilation, which on the subtler levels, as previous shows showing Sheldon Wolin's theory of inverted totalitarianism, even not say in the extreme sense of natives and blacks trying to be assimilated into the culture and other minorities, there's this inverted totalitarianism where people think they are going along with the groovy stuff, but it's really a form of being assimilated, and thus inverted totalitarianism. So instead of this assimilation and absorbing the big fish eating the little fish, it's celebrating all the fishes and all the sizes, and learning to work together. So we look at those two things on whatever metaphors you can think of for dealing with people, vomiting or ingesting, and apply that to various peoples, cultures, whatever. And it's easy to say these things, and when I think of my own experiences in getting along and not getting along with people of various cultures and traditions, that's where the real nitty-gritty work is. How do you get along with people even in proximity or close quarters where the cultures clash? That's the test. But some form of inclusion and acceptance, of course, is part of the answer. And I wanted to wrap up on that. The section in Pepe Escobar's Globalistan, after he's talking about the two examples of the other, he gives another, which just sort of reflects that cultural homogenization, inverted totalitarianism, whatever you call it. And it's because I find it a fascinating perspective So here's the paragraphs. In between, the faceless multitudes are left with the proliferation of what Bauman refers to as no places, or cities of nowhere. Places that are ostensibly public, but definitely non-communitarian. Places of passage, like airports, hotel lobbies, highway convenience stores. Already in the mid-1980s, French multidisciplinarian Paul Virilio was saying that in the future, all prisons, hotels, airports, and shopping malls would look exactly the same. Liquid modernity, synopticon society, so many other ways to define the realm of globalization. So there we have an interesting sort of the no places thing is the first thing that came to mind was the native peoples talking about sacred sites and the connection with the land and talk about ley lines or Stonehenge, whatever, sacred sites, a connection with the land that has history, how the land evokes memory, helps us connect with both physical and spiritual memory. So, and the communal lifestyle that people coming together in those sacred ways, day by day and by ceremonial times, there is a coming together, a communing, and those are with all different groups, peoples, whatever you call them, mystical orders, pagans, hundreds of native people's tribes with Turtle Island and around the world, different cultures doing different things, but all with respect for Mother Earth, Father Sky, in whatever names those people call those. So you have that example, and then you have this other example where society becomes sort of like he's saying, that everything sort of starts to seem the same, and that's that monoculture. Almost any sort of any American town where you go, if there's gas station, McDonald's, and also Abercrombie, Fitch, whatever fancy stores, it's that sort of cities of nowhere, suburban, whatever you call it. But it's coming from a corporate, that corporate state mold and model, rather than coming up, growing from the ground, so to speak, and literally and respecting the truths that each area has, the way Haudenosaunee have their longhouses and Lakota have their teepees, and out in the southwest they have their pueblos and such like. So each place has its uniqueness, which really needs to be honored, because that's what it takes to get along in each area, is knowing your own home turf a bit. And one more thing to throw in the pot here is that the sense of the airports, hotels, shopping malls, maybe except for the prisons, and what comes to mind there is the little Bennies, because just the example of the highway and the convenience store, you get your coffee and your muffin on the road, it's a nice convenience. And when you're waiting at the airport and you get to read a novel off the shelf and have your drink and your snack, these are those little conveniences that sort of soften the pablum. But I think it's helpful to not be deceived by these conveniences. Even something that I learned when I was visiting in the Southwest was even on a wider cultural scale, the pottery. I would see lots of Pueblo pottery, beautiful stuff, and sold as artwork, and well and good. Yet when I actually went into the visited families at the Jemez Pueblo and other pueblos, but I specifically remember Jemez Pueblo, and to see the pots on their kitchen, on top their kitchen counters, filled with, say, flour, beans, whatever it was, that to me showed me the real use of that pottery, that it's utilitarian and that it's holistic in the sense of it's part of the culture, the artwork combining with the day-to-day function, whereas that sort of touristy thing is to see the art simply as an art piece and a token of a token of the culture, which again is nice, and I'm sure it helps various artists pay their way. But just looking at a wider angle is to say, when that convenience store or that artwork becomes the dominant thing, it loses touch with the more fuller cultural perspective. So that seems to be the gist of it. And that fuller cultural perspective is the respect of various peoples, not the some peoples over other peoples. So that's the gist of this. Another sampler from Musings with the Golden Sparrow. And you may be wondering, where's the Golden Sparrow in all this? Well, that's intermittent throughout the book. And so that about does it for now. Thank you for listening. Have a good one. And we'll go out with a series of spoken word pieces. The writings are from John Trudell's book, Lines from a Mind, and pretty sure I played this series before, but it's one of my favorite. It's a series of his pieces titled Never Too Loudly, Very Eyes, A Dimension Called Loneliness, To God, and Look at Us. And the first piece has the quote I mentioned before, which fits quite well with the topic. That's why I picked it. We know the predator. We see them feed on us. We are aware to starve the beast is our destiny.
They were polite in their sophistication, smiling but never too loudly. Acting in civilized manner, an illusion of gentleness, always fighting to get their way. While the people see, the people know, the people wait, the people say. The closing of your doors will never shut us out. The closing of your doors can only shut you in. We know the predator. We see them feed on us. We are aware to starve the beast is our destiny. The times they were kind, they were polite, but never honest. We see your technological society devour you before your very eyes. We hear your anguished cries exalting greed through progress. While you seek material advances, the sound of flowers dying carry messages through the wind trying to tell you about balance and your safety. But your minds are chained to your machines and the strings dangling from your puppeteer's hands, turning you, twisting you into forms and confusions beyond your control. Your mind for a job, your mind for a TV, your mind for a hairdryer, your mind for consumption. With your atom bombs, your material bombs, your drug bombs, your racial bombs, your class bombs, your sexist bombs, your ageist bombs, devastating your natural shelters, making you homeless on Earth, chasing you into illusions, fooling you, making you pretend you can run away from the ravishing of your spirit. While the sound of flowers dying carry messages through the wind, trying to tell you about balance and your safety. Isolate us in a dimension called loneliness, leading us into the trap, believe in their power, but not in ourselves, piling us with guilt, always taking the blame, greed chasing out the balance, trying to isolate us in a dimension called loneliness, economic deity seizing power, through illusions created, armies are justified, class systems are democracy, God listens to warmongers' prayer, tyranny is here, dividing wrong. Trying to isolate us in a dimension called loneliness. Greed is parent. Insecurity, the happiness companion. Genocide conceived in sophistication. Technologic material civilization, irrationalization, replacing a way to live. Trying to isolate us in a dimension called loneliness. to you. There are some things we need to straighten out. It's about these Christians. They claim to be from your nation. But man, you should see the things they do all the time, blaming it on you. Manifest destiny, genocide, maximize profit, sterilization, raping the earth, lying, taking more than they need in all the forms of the greed. We ask them why. They say it's God's will. Damn God, they make it so hard. Remember Jesus? Would you send him back to them? Tell them not to kill him. Rather, they should listen. Stop abusing his name and yours. We do not mean to be disrespectful, but you know how it is. Our people have their own ways. We never even heard of you until not long ago. Your representative spoke magnificent things of you, which we were willing to believe. But from the way they acted, we know you and we were being deceived. We do not mean you or your Christian children any bad, but you all came to take all we had. We have not seen you, but we have heard so much. It is time for you to decide what life is worth. We already remember, but maybe you forgot. Look at us. Look at us. We are of earth and water. Look at them. It is the same. Look at us. We are suffering all these years. Look at them. They are connected. Look at us. We are in pain. Look at them, surprised at our anger. Look at us. We are struggling to survive. Look at them, expecting sorrow be benign. Look at us. We are the ones called pagan. Look at them on their arrival. Look at us. We are called subversive. Look at them, descending from name callers. Look at us. We wept sadly in the long dark. Look at them, hiding in technologic light. Look at us. We buried the generations. Look at them, inventing the body count. Look at us. We are older than America. Look at them, chasing a fountain of youth. Look at us. We are embracing Earth. Look at them, clutching today. Look at us. We are living in the generations. Look at them, existing in jobs and death. Look at us. We have escaped many times. Look at them. They cannot remember. Look at us. We are healing. Look at them. Their medicine is patented. Look at us. We are trying. Look at them. What are they doing? Look at us. We are children of Earth.